Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer, and good to be back in your studios again.
It is great to have you here. It's always fun to sit down and talk education and higher ed and thinking and math. We're going to be talking math again today.
One of your favorite subjects. We talked about that just the last episode.
We did. You know, we heard from a listener, Matt, who
wants to be a teacher, right?
He is studying to be a math teacher, as a matter of fact.
He's
a math guy, and he had written in with some really great questions. He had read a story at NPR.org about a professor emeritus of actually political science, but who's written a lot about education, who said that, you know, advanced math, we don't really need to require that in higher ed. And he makes an argument about that. And Matt called him.
Yeah, okay.
I bet that happens to him a lot.
I'm sure.
Matt was interested in hearing about some of those topics, and we covered some of that in a previous episode. But Matt also had a really interesting question about teaching math. And what he wanted to know is, how does one teach, and he said parenthetically, or force, current mathematics teachers to make math fascinating. So, you know, as somebody who's studying to be a math teacher, he wants to know, I mean, I'm sure he's seen students already, as you have, that go, math, oh my God, can't do it, it's boring, I don't want to be here, it's a requirement. So, you know, I'm essentially checking out. I'm here, but I'm not here. So how do you, how would you encourage teachers to make math fascinating?
Well, first of all, and I'll pull back from our last episode where we answered some of the other questions that were related to this. But, you know, it's interesting that math as a subject in school is one of the subjects where, for the most part, students take for one reason.
They have to.
Exactly. Exactly. And so you have a population sitting there in your classroom that really does not want to be there. If you gave them the option to walk out, they would probably almost all walk out. And so it's really hard to be a math teacher at any level, I would say. And so the idea of making it fascinating or joyful, which I don't think Matt used, but I often think about is, you know, how do you, learning should be pleasurable, even math learning. And it's also interesting that the students come equipped with a preconceived notion as to what mathematics is and how they perceive themselves within the discipline. And so a lot of the learning that has to happen in a math class where you're trying to bring fascination and joy is a lot of unlearning.
Ah, right? Yes.
That, you know, this is math and that's not math. And the idea of memorizing, you know, the algorithm because that's what the teacher told you to do before, that's not math. Math is a way and a process of penetrating things that are abstract. So how do you teach that? Well, I think, first of all, it really is fascinating. I mean, obviously, I'm completely biased because I am a mathematician by trade. But my fascination with mathematics is the fact that you don't need big equipment. You don't need high-powered this or anything. If you give me a pen and a piece of paper, I'm empowered with my own brain. If I've made meaning of some of these mathematical issues, I can actually figure things out. And I think it's almost as if, I mean, imagine like a mystery. Like, you ever watch these mystery shows? People love them. They're fascinated because they want to figure out who done it. Mathematics is just a huge who done it, right? You know, what is X? That's a mystery, right? And now you have to kind of present it in a way that is mysterious.
Well, and I think also a lot of people don't enjoy math because, and I'm going to use air quotes here, they get the answer wrong. Mm-hmm. And so their experience is they get new information, they go to a math question, they try to solve it, answer is wrong, that's a bummer. And, you know, it's just the negativity sort of snowballs instead of hearing, hey, no, that answer is actually not correct, but tell me how you got there and let's talk through it. Or let's build some satisfaction into the process.
Yes.
And maybe it's the third or fourth try when you get the correct solution, but getting there can be fun. And if you're rewarded or encouraged at something beyond, you know, the answer is 7, you put 4, that's wrong.
Right. Gee, this idea of learning from failure, I wonder if I've ever heard that before. You're absolutely right. And I think you gain greater satisfaction if the journey is actually more interesting and if it actually takes you a little bit longer to get there. But that should be your attitude, which is that you're making progress and the path forward versus getting the answer. And you're right, 7 is the wrong answer. You know, who cares? The question is, how were you thinking and what was going on? Like in my classroom, when someone says 7 and it's the wrong answer, I actually have them show us why they got 7. And then we really break it down as to what that person did. And that person becomes the teacher. As you know, I reward failure. And that's an example of why it's so powerful to do that. But to me, it's all the process and the journey that is the thing. And even not the right answer. Now, that's not to say that you need to be able to have numeracy, but you can gain a greater fluency and a greater understanding by actually learning from those mistakes.
How did the students respond when you have them kind of walk through their process that led them to the wrong answer? I can imagine, thinking back to my student days, I would have been mortified and embarrassed, A, that I got it wrong, and then B, to show everybody how I got it wrong.
So there's two things that I do. First of all, as you'll remember from a year ago, I shared that I actually assess failure. Failure's on my curriculum, so it's 5% of your grade. So if you want to get an A in my class, you've got to actually promote effective failure. So that's the first thing. And then I compound that with the attitude that I use in the classroom. So, you know, if someone gets it wrong, you know, Tommy gets the wrong answer, I just don't say, okay, Tommy, that's wrong. Who else has an answer? But it's, okay, Tommy, what did you do? And now Tommy takes the role of the instructor. So it's not embarrassing at all.
Tommy's in charge now.
Tommy's in charge and realizes that he's moving the conversation forward rather than just, oh, you know, what's the right answer? And so, and I also will name principles after the people. So there'll be a Tommy's theorem. And so they become famous. Hey, look at that. Because of my mistake, we found this new principle that is correct. And that's now called Tommy's theorem. So it's to engage them, but you have to create the attitude in the classroom. And so when you ask me, you know, what would I have them do, the teachers? How would we train the teachers? I would train them to make sure, first of all, that they appreciate that math is fascinating, that they see that, because a lot of math teachers don't see that. And then also to realize that there is not just one route to that, and we have to be open. And it's hard, by the way. You know, when a student comes to me and says, hey, what, can I do it this way? If I hadn't seen that before and I don't know, I don't try to pretend. I don't try to fake it. I just say, you know what? I've never thought about that. Let's think about it together. And then they can actually watch that process happen live with an actual mathematician. And then I could say, oh, that will always work. Or look, it only works in this case. Ah, that's really cool. For this case, it always works. But in general, you have to be careful because of this, this, and this. You have to give them the why. Math is all about the why. And we have to offer the pleasure and the fascination in the why.
So let's do a little modeling here. We've got a mathematician here. That's you.
Thank you.
Let's work through the puzzler from last week, which was pretty mathy. It was
actually
algebra-ish.
And it's funny that I just said the why, because it also, there's a why in this
right.
question,
it's
the letter
about,
Y.
Right. It's all about that. So remind us that puzzler
it's
was.
It's an awful algebra riddle, which was sent in to us by, shared by one of our listeners. And it was to actually figure out what would happen if you multiply all these binomials. So take x minus a, imagine parentheses around that quantity, and multiply it by the quantity x minus b with parentheses around that one, and then x minus c, and then x minus d, and all the way down to x minus y, and then x minus z, all the way through the letters of the alphabet. And the question is, how do you solve that
expression? You want to solve for x?
No, there's no equation. It's not an equation.
Oh, I want to. How do you solve it?
Yeah, can you simplify that? What is it? What does it mean? What does it equal?
Uh-huh.
And you, I remember this from last time. You immediately, an enormous light bulb went off. It almost blinded me here in the studio. And then you wrote something down. Uh-huh. I actually forced you to share it with me. You had your hand covered originally. I don't know why. There's no other people here. And then you shared it with me, and you're absolutely correct. So will you please share the answer you had last week?
I will.
And then share the why.
Sure. So the answer is 0.
So you think that all of that stuff, when it's worked out, will actually equal 0?
Yes, I do.
Amazing. Now, why?
So when you were going through this and explaining it, I specifically asked, is it all the way through x minus z? And you said yes. So I thought, that means there's an x minus x as one of the parenthetical phrases, I'll call it. And we all know that anything minus itself is 0. And we know that anything times 0 is 0. So you take the other 25, x minus a, x minus b, all of that times 0 gives you 0.
That is brilliant and absolutely correct. Isn't that neat? Isn't that fun? So it sounds very complicated.
Fun.
But then if you think about it, again, you can make the why and realize that something complicated is actually something easy in disguise.
I love that one. That's a great one.
Thank you. So, well, and you got it instantly.
I did. Maybe that's why I liked it. I don't know. But actually, what that does make me think, so as we just wrap up our discussion here, is it okay for math to be fun?
Oh, come on. Now, I'll let you answer that. What am I going to answer to that?
Well, you're going to say yes.
Yes. Learning anything should be joyful. And mathematics is a joyful pursuit. Mathematics is made up of human ideas that were created and discovered by human beings. And it is a joy to uncover that. The question is, making that fascinating and making that joyful requires people to not memorize things mindlessly, which is frustrating, but rather have the satisfaction of having that aha moment where it's like, ah, I finally got it. And that's a triumph where you're on top of the mountain and you're looking out and seeing an amazing horizon.
You know, really a better question for me to ask would have been, is it okay for us to give teachers license to make it fun? Because I think as a society, we want teachers in a box, having students sitting at desks, teaching a certain way. We want it to look and be a certain way that does not involve a lot of hilarious laughter and fun.
And fun doesn't mean laughing,
right.
Ha-ha. Fun means just
enjoy. And so enjoying joy. And satisfying. That's not usually, I think.
And it should be and has to be. And yeah, the fact that we have this phrase, math phobia, we have no history phobia or social studies phobia or English phobia, but we have math phobia, that rolls off the tongue. The fact that we have that shows you that there's more work to be done to make math joyful and fascinating. It is. And if we offer it as a suite of ideas that can be understood and mastered, then people will actually respond to it.
Well, thank you, Ed, for helping us keep our brains sharp by enjoying learning. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find Higher Ed on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.